What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and special guest back on the show, Jay Christian. What's up, guys?
Jay, how's it going? Obviously, we do our Full Access Hoop show, and you are now on the NBA Outlet to talk Lakers. Nick, always a pleasure. And this one's going to be spicy, I feel like.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nick. Pleasure as always. Corey, I don't know if you just wanted to plug our pod just 30 seconds into your introduction or if you genuinely thought I didn't know which pod I was on. But in any event, glad to be here. Let's get it cracking.
And like Corey hinted at, we are continuing our NBA Outlet preview series. Up today is the Lakers. Just a quick reminder, you can check us out iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. Also, head to Designtree/OffTheGlass, discount code OTG5, grab yourself some OTG merch. But let's get into the Lakers. Season wasn't as successful as you would expect from a LeBron team last year. 37-45, 10th in the Western Conference. What emoji would you guys use to describe last season?
For me, it's going to be the stern looking emoji face, just eyes straight, mouth across, because we had the expectations of, you know, the Lakers being extremely good, LeBron James coming in for his first year. They obviously had a decent start. And then when the injuries started to kick in, this thing went downhill fast. LeBron got hurt for the first time. The Anthony Davis trade saga was a dark cloud for his organization. And it was just the like a what the hell is going on type of year.
Yeah, I think when the season started in the offseason after LeBron signed and sort of it was still talk about how the roster was going to be constructed. And then Magic came out during Summer League and said, well, we're going, you know, where the whole league is zigging, we're going to zag on our roster. So I think in the preseason, it was sort of the big eye emoji, like, ooh, look what the Lakers are doing. So out of the box. And then once the season started and LeBron got hurt, it kind of went to the meh, like, we tried it. Like, we tried to outthink it. And, yeah, LeBron got hurt and it didn't work. Turns out this roster's kind of trash. So, we won't be making the playoffs. What are you going to do? What's that Jay-Z album, Kingdom Come or whatever? And he does a song, Show Me What You Got. He talks about, oh, I retired. He's like, I came back. What do you want me to do? I'm sorry. Who knows? Hey, that's how I felt like the Lakers went about halfway through, around Christmas time, because that's when LeBron went down. And they were like, oh, yeah, screw it. We'll see you guys next year. And it's really a long game, right? That was the whole discussion, right? After it was apparent they weren't making the playoffs. Is like, well, it's really like a 4-year plan. It's like, well, it's not what you told me when I bought these expensive ass tickets, but thank you. So I'd go with the eyes transitioning to the meh around Christmas.
Pretty spot on. I have the emoji with like the magnifying glass by its eye, just because this team was like constantly under the magnifying glass all season long. You know, obviously it's the Lakers, then you have LeBron in there, and then just all the craziness that just went on the entire season, you know, from Rondo and Chris Paul and just like the LeBron injury, and then you guys mentioned the AD trade. There was always a storyline, even though the Lakers weren't that good, you know, after December, they were probably the most talked about team in the league. Now, what would you guys say was the biggest positive takeaway of last season for LA?
I'd probably say the biggest positive takeaway is LeBron James, from an offensive standpoint, still looks just as good. Obviously, the defense we saw take a step back, but you still have LeBron averaging, you know, 27-9-9 or 7-7, whatever the final line was, which is still good to see from a guy who's got so many miles on his legs, all the deep playoff runs. So seeing LeBron not take that step back yet, I think, was promising. Because there really wasn't a ton of good takeaways since half this roster is gone.
Well, I was going to say the same thing. I mean, I couldn't point to any young talent that seemed promising is now in a Pelicans uniform. So that analysis goes out the window. But to kind of be, you know, counterintuitive here, I think the fact that they failed and failed so hard was the positive of last year. Because again, you know, when the roster was constructed, you know, Magic and the front office, I think, you know, God bless them, but I think they tried to get too cute, obviously. When there's a whole blueprint and sample size of what kind of roster construction works around LeBron James as a player, and the Lakers tried something completely out of the box, to put it nicely, that failed miserably. I think it's also a positive. I agree with David Griffin, who's now running the basketball operations in New Orleans, when he did the interview that caught him so much heat a few months ago, where I think there's some truth to when LeBron landed in LA. You got the air last year of a person, in my opinion, who didn't think there was anything left for him to prove within his basketball legacy. I mean, I think it looked so much like a business move last season that LeBron was there. He's working on movies. He's trying to, you know, set up his financial situation to where he can own a team one day. And, you know, he's also on the Lakers. And it just seemed like such a transactional move at the time. I think the fact that the Lakers didn't experience any sort of real success on the court has LeBron James motivated, has him back in the gym. Corey knows this. I always make the comparison to Jordan after he came back that playoff run and the Bulls got beat by the Orlando Magic with Penny and Shaq. Jordan came back the next year, rejuvenated. The Bulls went 72-10 and got a championship, number 4 of 6. I think LeBron is in that mindset, and I think he's refocused his self back to his game on the court. And I don't think that would have happened had the Lakers had some modicum of success this year. I think they had to bottom out and had to make it just as ugly as possible for the front office to get a little more serious about building this team and chasing championships.
Yeah, I love that one, Jay. That's what I'm going with as well. I think just the fact that everything didn't go well, the roster construction was terrible, there was no success, this team wasn't championship ready. You know, a lot of people thought LeBron coming to Lakers, instant playoff team, kind of regardless, obviously did have the injury, but the West is a different animal, so they had to make bigger moves. Then I also think Magic stepping down is a positive takeaway. Him and Rob Pelinka just didn't get along. You know, Magic really didn't seem that interested in being part of the Lakers front office. It was more of like a look thing than an actual I'm here to do work thing. So I think now that the mindset is a little bit different going to this season, and that wouldn't have happened last year without all the negative stuff. But I guess, what's the biggest negative takeaway from last season?
How long is this pod?
I think my biggest negative would just be the Lakers had a big sense of dysfunction. Obviously, the Magic Johnson saga ending as abruptly as possible with him just quitting on the spot without telling Jeannie Buss. the fact that Rob Pelinka tells stories that aren't true.
God, that is bad, especially about a person that has passed away. Like, that's right. Just the worst.
And then, of course, you know, you have Jeannie Buss, where she's still trying to make her name as an owner, following in her father's footsteps and her brother's, of course, as she seceded. But, you know, there's just that level of dysfunction. You still have the LeBron. Does he control the fate of players' destinies on a roster? Obviously, he's always like, you know, I don't make the decisions. It's, you know, I'm not running the team. But as we all know from the outside looking in, it always feels like LeBron is heavily involved in decisions.
It sure feels like he saved Kyle Kuzma.
Right, yeah. He feels like he puts in his 2 cents on who I want on this side of the aisle compared to this side. So I think the biggest dysfunction is just knowing that, you know, there is a lot of pressure when you play with LeBron James in general. And then you have this front office, which has not been stable yet these last couple of years.
What do you got, Jay? Biggest negative takeaway?
A similar vein as Corey's. I don't think anyone knew, maybe insiders, people covering the Lakers beat understood this, just how dysfunctional the Lakers internal organization is. And it gives me pause that they don't know what they're doing. As you guys know, I am a born and raised proud Texan. And when I was a kid growing up, the governor at one time was a lady named Ann Richards, who was a very charismatic person who won the governorship in 90 and went up against then gubernatorial candidate George W. Bush in 1998. And of Bush at the time, Ann Richards said, you know, George was born on third and thinks he hit a triple. That's how I feel about...
I like that.
That's how I feel about Jeannie Buss and the Buss kids. I think when you look back at the Lakers' success, that was the marketing mind, the marketing genius, the want to be successful of a Dr. Jerry Buss. Now, I think Jeannie is really good on the sort of business side, the Laker girl side, and that's not derogatory in any way, but just the brand of the Lakers, I think she's great at. I think the basketball aspect of the Lakers, what you need to be successful on the court, which translates to all these branding and marketing opportunities. I think this season was a peek into, and maybe these last few seasons, maybe what an aberration these last 4 or 5 years that, you know, it wasn't her brothers who were the problem. It wasn't Mitch Kupchak who's the problem. It was Jeannie Buss who's going to, you know, Linda Rambis and Kurt Rambis for basketball advice of all people. And it just, it, you just had no idea. It's kind of like when you, you know, you start renovating a house or something, you start tearing down walls. It's like, holy shit, I had no idea that these wires were not up to code since the 1930s. Like, you had no idea until you were dealt with the situation of this season. So that's one negative for me, is if I'm someone like Anthony Davis, who the Lakers have decided that, you know, LeBron will bridge, you know, the gap between this era and then the start of the Anthony Davis era. If I'm Anthony Davis, it's not a foregone conclusion that I stay with the Lakers after LeBron retires. I think I need to see more from that organization, from that front office, before I entrust my basketball future with Jeannie Buss and the Rambuses. So that's the biggest negative for me, is that they just don't know what the hell they're doing in the front office. So.
Yeah, no, you guys nailed it on that. I guess I'll go a little bit with the on-the-court stuff. I don't think they necessarily played great after December when LeBron went down. Wasn't a great team. Couldn't stay healthy. Other than LeBron, you had Lonzo, you had Ingram. Felt like everybody was banged up at a certain point. And then also, this kind of gets to the roster construction. Really bad three-point shooting team. One of the worst in the NBA. And we know you're probably not winning a championship if you're not a top 10 three-point shooting team.
True.
So moving on to next season, obviously we'll talk about the acquisitions, but via the OTG staff and our power rankings, have the Lakers ranked at number 4. What do you think of this? Fair, too high, too low?
I think it's fair. I think if they were outside the top 5, I'd say you're high. anytime you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis headlining a team, especially to start the year, obviously new head coach and Frank Vogel, new assistant coach and Jason Kidd, which I think is worth mentioning. A lot of new pieces. There is going to be some trial and error period for this team as they try and figure it out. Obviously, Dwight Howard brought on board too. We'll talk about the additions a little bit. But I think 4 is fair because you have arguably 2 of the top 5 players in the NBA.
Yeah, 4 is a great number, but I'm going to say I think it's a little too low. I think the Lakers, for me, are probably no worse than the second best team. And I think, and I'm only giving... if I were to seed ground, I would only say to the Clippers, and that's only because the Clippers have better roster continuity, I think a little bit better pieces in place. You know, they were able to, whereas the Lakers had to obviously trade assets to get Anthony Davis, the Clippers were in large part able to keep their team intact and then also add Kawhi Leonard, and Kawhi Leonard put on his GM hat and got Paul George out of Oklahoma City. Turns out fishing in ponds in Oklahoma City can only go so far before you want to get back to Southern California. So I think I would have the Lakers probably actually no worse than 2. And that's, you know, probably a glass half full kind of estimation on my part. But yeah, I think, like you said, Corey, I mean, it's LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I mean, you don't, you know, it doesn't have to get any, you know, it's no quadratic equation you have to figure out. That's a pretty good team to start out with. So I probably wouldn't have them any worse than 2. I could hear the argument for 1, actually.
And actually, my mistake, they're actually number 3 in the OTG power ranking, so not 4.
Too low, Nick. No, I don't care. That's
the only teams above them are the Clippers and the Bucks. And I think going this season, that might be fair. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, you know, this is a team you're going to look at as a highly likely to win a championship, if not get to the Western Conference Finals. So I think the debate between them and the Clippers is fair. And then I think you just look at the Bucks is, you know, they're pretty much bringing back what they had last season. And the East just isn't as tough. So I think the ranking, and as long as you have them top 5, it's fine. But after that, you know, then you're kind of getting a little crazy. But getting to the offseason, Corey mentioned it, new head coach Frank Vogel and also a couple new assistants, including Jason Kidd. Thoughts on this?
I mean, I'm a big Frank Vogel guy from his Indiana Pacer days. good defensive-minded coach. Struggles in the half-court sets a little bit. Struggles in late-game situations. Wasn't the greatest at drawing up plays for Paul George and those Pacer teams. But still, a good defensive-minded coach, which will help because this team wasn't very good on defense last year. Jason Kidd, I know the rumors and everything swirling is the fact that he's probably going to get Frank Vogel fired and take over the job at some point this year. We'll have to see if that happens, but I like Frank for the job as of right now, a low ego guy. Am a little bit concerned of how he deals with the star-like attitude of LeBron James. Obviously, you know, we just see this. Like, LeBron James will decide your fate as a head coach relatively quickly. You know, if he doesn't like what you're doing, it's you're probably not going to last. We saw that with David Blatt. We saw that with Mike Brown to an extent. Almost got Spoelstra fired. Luckily, they were able to rally around that. But, you know, I think Frank Vogel is a good coach. It's just interesting to see if he can handle the egos of that locker room. He's never really had this many star players on one team, obviously.
So my head was spinning with a lot of things, and I realized that I watched too much TV. One, I was actually thinking of Tom Holland as Spider-Man when he's always like, have you ever seen this really old movie? And I was thinking about that for another analogy. Then I realized I do that a lot on these pods, and I'm trying to get better at it, but I can't, you know, I am who I am. So what do you want from me? Right. So, one thing I was thinking about is this really old movie called Good Will Hunting, where, you know, Will's on the board with the professor, and the professor can't figure out this math equation, and I was like, look, I did
Jay,
it.
We're not that old. I know what movie that is.
So I feel like LeBron's that way. He's a basketball savant, right? He's Will Hunting in high tops, right? So there's always been a lot made, I think, with Brian Windhorst and others who's covered him his entire career, is that LeBron, as far as a coach is concerned, needs to respect you. If you played in the league, that, you know, puts you to the front of the line. If you've got some jewelry on your hand, that helps as well. Vogel is someone who LeBron went up against head-to-head in those Pacers Heat rivalries. Vogel has his respect, or has the opportunity to coach LeBron James. I don't think he's coming in as a David Blatt or even Eric Spoelstra, which that was a great point on that Corey, that, you know, he tried to get Spoelstra fired, but Pat Riley, strong organization, said, nope, I'm not coaching, go back downstairs. I don't know if that happens in Los Angeles. That's another conversation I'm sure we can talk about here in a bit. But I think Vogel has LeBron's sort of early respect. I think sort of like a Chuck Daly, Michael Jordan situation. I think he's a great defensive-minded coach. I am curious about how he will manage star personalities, and not even just stars, but a guy like Rondo, right? Like, that's, you know, how do you deal with that? A veteran who, you know, is, again, a great basketball mind, is, you know, weird as shit off the court, but on the court is a very savvy basketball player. But I think Vogel has the wits to match with guys that are just, you know, basketball geniuses. So I think that'll help. I guess I want to put this question to you guys, because for me, on the one hand, it's a dream to coach the Lakers if you're a basketball coach. On the other hand, there's no way in hell I'd put Jason Kidd on my staff, or I would back out of every room I was in with him, because I would not trust him as far as I can throw him. And it sounds like that was the ultimatum or the conditions for accepting the job for Frank Vogel, was bringing Jason Kidd on. How do you guys feel about that? If you're Frank Vogel, do you accept that? I mean, obviously he did, but if you're in that situation, do you say, no, that's cool, I'll just work on NBA TV for a year, or do you go coach the Lakers, which is a dream job, and have Jason Kidd sitting, you know, a seat down from you?
And that's pretty much what Ty Lue did. He said, like, hey, I don't want the job, I'm not going to deal with this. I guess, like, Frank Vogel, I guess he just took the job, and like you guys said, he's a solid head coach. He's not anything amazing, so you know what you're getting into. But I would, I guess, be a little bit nervous about Jason Kidd being there, not only because of his history, but he also has a pretty good relationship with LeBron James. So if things don't go well, okay, you know, Jay's my boy, like, Rob, let's make the switch now. I think he can do great things for us. And Kidd, obviously, he's played in the league recently, so he has a better feel for what's going on, I guess, in that sense. And that's something LeBron might look at. And LeBron might feel like, hey, I might be able to have more power of Kidd's head coach, but it's going to be up to the Lakers front office.
Yeah, if you're Frank, you just needed to get a job, I feel like. After the Pacers, he was in Orlando, and there's photos of Frank Vogel, like, from Indiana to Orlando to now, and, like, that man looked miserable in Orlando. Like, he had a full beard, his hair was looking a little rough, and now he looks like he's got the white teeth, clean shave, looks in, like, the best shape of his own life as a coach. So I think for Vogel, you just have to take the risk. I mean, worst comes to worst, you get fired, you're still going to get your money. So you might as well see if you can win a title, because this is going to be the closest he's ever been to winning a title, because he's got the guy you could never get past, LeBron James, on his roster.
And it's interesting in the sense, it's like the opposite end of the spectrum. It's like you go to Orlando, you don't have much talent, you don't really have expectations. Now you're going to LA, high-level talent, you have two of the best players in the league, arguably two top three, top five players, and the expectation here is you better win a championship within the next two seasons, if not this year.
Right, right. So does Frank Vogel make it to the end of the year?
Corey, you go first. You know him better.
Shit. I'm gonna say yes, because I don't want him to get fired. I'm gonna ride for my guy. but I will say this: if we're near the end of December and this team is, you know, around 500 or not that many games over 500, I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's when we see a Jason Kidd switch.
I think Vogel's going to keep the job. I think one guy they signed that's like going to be a big help for Frank Vogel and all these personalities is Jared Dudley. Like,
yeah.
Amazing locker room guy, and he'll be the type that'll kind of do that extra work so Frank Vogel doesn't have to manage the personalities quite as much.
I mean, I guess you could have Melo instead of Jared Dudley. What the fuck? I'm sorry. That was, I was channeling my inner Royce White. That was, I need to jump on the Rockets pod so we can talk Royce White when we draft that guy and find out he didn't like flying on planes. But we've been good to know in the pre-draft workout. But anyhow, sorry.
Moving on from coaching, obviously that'll be a topic for the Lakers all year, especially if they don't have the success. Draft pick wise, nothing crazy. Traded all those to New Orleans, but with the 46th pick, they drafted Talen Horton Tucker. Thoughts on him?
Don't buy, kid. supposed to be a somewhat NBA ready now player to a degree. Has some good defensive abilities. I don't know how much we're actually going to see of him. I think the vets are going to obviously get a boatload of the minutes, but he's definitely going to get some sort of opportunity and chance. So it's just a solid pick.
Yeah, with a lot of the older guys on the roster, this is a young guy that's known to have some versatility, somewhat NBA ready. For a second round pick, I think there is some value here.
Yeah, I think I think this might be the case for every Laker draft pick in the next. I was going to say the next couple of years, but. We need to talk about those picks on like the Pelican podcast, because that's where those picks are. But I think that this will be an example of interesting to see. This will be a situation where he gets minutes, like Corey was saying, veteran laden team, and he'll pop up in 2 or 3 years somewhere else. You're like, oh God, I didn't know that the Lakers drafted him. I think there's a chance to grow and get that sort of championship sort of pedigree and professional quote unquote experience with such a veteran laden team. But in terms of contributions, he might do something wild at the championship parade, but I think on the court, I think there'll be opportunities, but nothing that'll really stand out for us this season. I don't think just based on talent or ability, but just strictly the team being in sort of win now mode and being so veteran laden with stars and just veterans taking up a lot of the minutes.
Yeah, I mean, his best bet at minutes is, if someone gets injured around, like, January, February, he plays for a stretch, and he's unlikely to get playoff minutes. But moving on to the other off-season acquisitions, trades and free agency, obviously the big move here, Anthony Davis to the Lakers for Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, 3 first-round picks, including the number 4 pick in the previous draft. Thoughts on the AD trade? Obviously, we're going to talk about the other free agent acquisitions, but thoughts on this and how it all went down and it pretty much carried over from February to June.
I mean, the Lakers had their eyes on one guy, and they were going to do whatever they had to get that guy.
Boom or bust.
Yeah, so obviously they had the assets. They had to, pick and choose the young prospects they wanted to throw in. Kyle Kuzma was saved off the chopping block by LeBron James. Kyle Kuzma putting on that necklace last year for LeBron James courtside was a big reason why Kyle Kuzma stayed.
That doesn't happen. He's not on the team.
Yeah. And then, of course, it's interesting now having, like, the Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart interview where Josh Hart, it was just miserable in L.A., which I would assume is because of all these trade rumors constantly. Lonzo mentioned how he kind of knew he was going to be traded because his name was always in the trade rumors. But the Lakers gave rid of, 3 young guys in Hart, Ingram, and Lonzo, and, a lot of draft picks. Probably one of the, before the Paul George trade, the most assets I've ever seen in a trade. But you had to do it because you're getting a once-in-a-lifetime generational player in Anthony Davis. I'm sure Jay's going to say this point because he says it on Philosophy Soups all the time. If you have the opportunity to get a big-name guy, to get a star on your roster, you go out and you get that star. This is a star-driven league. And you get Anthony Davis. So I think the Lakers had to do it, and now you have your future for the next 2 years, 3 years is LeBron and AD, and then you have your next 10 years with Anthony Davis as your star player.
Corey, let me ask you this. Which young guy would you have kept? Is it Kuzma? Because I have a thought on this, but I'm curious to see what you and Nick think.
I actually wouldn't have kept Kuzma. I think I would have kept Lonzo, believe it or not.
No, that's okay. Nick, what about you?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have gone with Kuzma. I wouldn't have gone with Lonzo either. I don't know Brandon Ingram enough to decide if it would be him. because I don't know if his fit with LeBron is great. I feel like Josh Hart's fit would be the best with a roster like this because he's just a versatile player. You can fit into multiple roles. Where Kuzma's like a guy who still needs the ball in his hands a lot, and I still feel like he's best as a six man, where Josh Hart might be able to be, you know, your starting two combo guard that gives you a lot of different elements on the court. But obviously he has the least amount of value, I think, out of the four. He just would be the best fit with a roster full of other stars and good players, where the other guys have more potential to be better players down the line.
Yeah, I think I'd have gone Lonzo as well. Actually, shocker. I just think on the court, I think defensively, his defense is already at a pretty much elite status, actually, on the perimeter, and that's what you need. And we'll talk about this more with roster additions and how the team's constructed this year. But I still think there's a void at point guard. I mean, Lonzo, you know, can't shoot. You know, even I don't know why he didn't put out a series of videos like Ben Simmons, but to show how much his shooting has improved. But that being aside, I think he's a great passing guard. I think having a guard that's not, you know, you don't need him to have the scoring load with LeBron and AD. So him, you know, hitting an occasional shot's fine, but he passes the ball like no other. Jason Kidd would have been on the staff. Having him as a mentor for Lonzo Ball would have been great. Like I say, he's 6'5", already rangy on defense. I just thought he's a better fit. And, I mean, something that appeals to the buses, quite frankly, he's a L.A. kid, and I think that still sort of matters in a city of stars. That would have been a great story. Kuz, I don't know. I thought the Lakers, I think Lonzo addressed more of a need, because I think you're right with your assessment, Nick, of Josh Hart. I think Lonzo's that, but more talent, more potential, right? I think Josh Hart is a guy you're going to look up and is probably in the league for 14, 15 years, but just kind of right there, sort of steady, not quite but like a Jameer Nelson kind of career. Just he's strong, steady throughout, make a lot of money, help a lot of teams. But I think Lonzo, believe it or not, you know, when he takes off those damn shoes, it's real. He takes off the triple B shoes and actual Nikes. I think he can really play. I think having that security, if he just survived that sort of trade to New Orleans and he'd been the last man standing, I think we would have seen a very big jump in his game, just that security and confidence, knowing, okay, I'm on this team, I'm at this roster. I don't think he and LeBron were a bad fit. I mean, I just think it was injury and timing. I agree. I thought B.I. and LeBron were the worst sort of fit on the court. So I think it's good for him to get out. If it were me, if I had to pick one and say, no, you're safe, you're my child, I would say it would probably be Lonzo. But I was just curious what you guys thought of that.
I would say this too, from the Lakers' perspective, I would assume they would have to include Lonzo because he has the biggest salary out of all four of those guys.
That's true.
So you need to match it up. And then also, I think it just provides the most value for New Orleans too. And the only thing I would like wonder for Lonzo too is like, how much of the shoes is actually a reason for his injury, or is he just a guy who's going to be injured every year? Because obviously, you need to be on the court to be effective.
So you don't believe what the shoes like? Man, okay, we took the shoes.
I mean,
off,
they're probably bad, but like maybe they already did their damage. You know, like
that's a good point. Yeah. So that's interesting. In Bill Simmons' Big Book of Basketball, he talks about Grant Hill, and he says, you know, and he sort of assesses at the end. He says, like, I don't know if the Fila's are what caused Grant Hill to have all those foot injuries, but I know he doesn't wear them anymore and he wears like orthopedics now. And, you know, his career was screwed up for it. So I don't know if it was the Fila's or not, but that's interesting. And that's a thing I didn't even think of. Maybe screwed up trying to play high intensity NBA minutes in some shit shoes that are, that Payless wouldn't even take, could be problematic.
People like undervalue the amount of shoes has on your, if you're like on your feet, and like, obviously Jay, you played basketball at a high level, like your feet feel bad if you don't have good shoes, if you're practicing all day.
Oh no, it's a thing. It's really a thing. And one thing, and I think we kind of went over it because we're talking new coach, but Corey brought this point up and it kind of wanted me to talk. We're sort of quote unquote new GM sort of with Rob Pelinka. Corey made the point, you know, AD is here now for the LeBron years and then setting up what AD will look like for the next 10 years, perhaps in a Lakers uniform. I feel like this is buying Rob some time to say, look, okay, you got LeBron in under contract for the next couple of years. You have to start figuring out cap imaginations. You start figuring out, you know, you guys have to get smarter as a front office to figure out how to do this. So when Anthony Davis, when it's his team and he has the keys, you have a plan that you can show him. We're going after these guys. This is who we're trying to get. This is who we're trying to sign. And with no draft picks, by the way, it's all going to be veterans and on the fly and trades and mid-level exceptions. how do you guys feel about Rob Pelinka running the show? I mean, it sounds like he was sort of had a little finger aspect going on before this season, and kind of got magic out of the paint, which was probably needed. I mean, I love magic, but I mean, yeah. And so what do you guys think about Rob as a GM? Didn't feel like he has, like, he had ingratiated himself to other organizations from his time as an agent. And it sounds like people will not deal with him just because they're the Lakers and they're like, screw the Lakers. What do you think about his potential as being a successful championship conductor of an NBA franchise?
Definitely think there's some concern with everything we've outlined. But at the end of the day, it's about winning, right? So if this Lakers team with LeBron and Anthony Davis have success, and then you're looking at the Anthony Davis-centric team going forward, I think more so you're just worried about the talent on the roster, less so than you are the GM, as long as there's results.
I think the crazy thing is here is that people might be like, oh, Rob Pelinka is a great GM if the Lakers somehow win, you know, two or three championships, but it'll just be because they got, like, hand-gifted LeBron and Anthony Davis. It's not like Rob Pelinka is out here, like, maneuvering the cap. I mean, he did work the cap a little bit for the AD trade, but it's not like they're doing some crazy stuff. Like, they're getting these big-name players because they're LA. They got LeBron because they're the Lakers, and then they got AD because LeBron is with the Lakers. So I think he could still have success, but it doesn't mean he's actually a good GM. Like, I don't think the things that Corey's pointed out, like the line, and then, like, you mentioned, like, other people not wanting to work with him, and Magic even calling him, like, super shady and talking bad behind his back. I don't think that's, like, good qualities of a leader, and that's essentially what you are as, you know, a GM or president of basketball operations. You're leading that entire front office and that team. So I'm not sure if Rob Pelinka is ever going to be a good GM, but he might have success just because of where he's at.
Also, well, needs to learn how to do CCs in emails, because he sent his talking shit emails to
Johnson, which is not he good. Should just have Rob Lowe go to press conferences for him.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it's a tough gig, because as his friend Heath Ledger told him once, you know, you die a hero or live long enough to see yourself becoming a hero.
Oh, God.
Fill him for that.
Talking other Laker free agent signings, we're not going to talk about all of them. You can just tell me out of all the guys I'm going to name, which ones you like the best. Avery Bradley, Quinn Cook, DeMarcus Cousins, Troy Daniel, Jared Dudley, Danny Green, and Dwight Howard.
They need to update the list. I don't know if DeMarcus we can.
DeMarcus is a little rude. It's a little cold now.
I mean, it still was.
So, obviously, I love the Danny Green signing. You needed to get a 3-and-D guy on this roster, even though I saw people saying, like, LeBron's going to make Danny Green a spot-up shooter, and I'm just like, watched Danny Green's entire career? Literally all dribble. He is.
He's been in the league for, like, 10-plus years and still can't dribble. I think, like, we might have better handles than him.
The handle needs some work. It's suspect.
So Danny Green was a good signing because you need, essentially, you know, championship pedigree. Guy's got a couple titles. I think that's important to have. So the two signings I like the most are, like, the unflashy ones, and that's Avery Bradley and Dwight Howard. Because I think Avery Bradley, there is some world where he gets back to, like, some part of his Boston Celtics days where he becomes just a really good system defender, can hit the knockdown three. I'm really not sure what's happened these last 2 years that he's kind of fallen from grace and he's kind of just lost his offensive game. But I think there is something still there, being back in a winning environment, being around LeBron. I think that could get something out of Avery Bradley. And then Dwight Howard, you know, they're going to need him because Anthony Davis just doesn't want to play center. He said he will be in the playoffs, but not in the regular season. Different discussion. Cousins going down. You need to have that big guy in the middle. You can't rely on JaVale McGee. So I do like the fact that you have Dwight Howard. I mentioned this. The last time he was in the NBA, well, played a full season with the Charlotte Hornets, 81 games. He averaged 16-12. I mean, that's obviously in a lesser role on this Lakers team. I'm not expecting that, but 10-8 doesn't seem out of the realm of possibilities. If he's around the basket, LeBron can give him some oops, give him some touches. So I like the low-risk, high-reward for both Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley the most.
Yeah, you know, you nailed it for me, Corey. Yesterday, I was actually playing with the Lakers on 2K, and my son got the team from the 2000s, I think, which I thought was a dick move. But I was like, oh, that's some bullshit. But I say that because I was spotting up with Danny Green, and I think he fits a role that there's always this guy on LeBron sort of championship teams. This is one, I think the Lakers said, you know what? Why are we overthinking it? These are the rosters that have worked traditionally with LeBron James. And gosh, I mean, if they just had that hindsight a year ago, imagine who they could have under contract now. But that's another pod for another day. But Danny Green fits this role sort of like a Shane Battier, Mike Miller, with more, you know, as sort of like a J.R. Smith. There's that guy that's in the lineup that, you know, you look up and he's had that game where he's got 6 3-pointers and he's, you know, locking down the opposing two guard or three guard, and he's sort of transitional. Don't really want him running point for the handles discussion we just had. But I think that piece is a piece that's always a cornerstone of a LeBron James team, is that other wing player that can, you know, just traditional 3-and-D guy. I still think Green has a lot left in the tank to contribute. Championship pedigree for sure. I'm also very intrigued on Dwight Howard. Personally, I am very high on Dwight Howard. I've always liked his game. It's weird sort of when he got signed and people talk about, well, you know, Dwight Howard being a knucklehead, et cetera, et cetera. And to me, I was always thought he was really just kind of a goofy guy. I think the only time I thought as a player where he was kind of shady was when he had that weird interview with Stan Van Gundy, and that was awkward, where he, you know, tried to say he didn't get him fired or try to get him fired, et cetera, et cetera. That was the only part I was like, ah, that's a bad look, Dwight. Rest of it to me, honestly, is just, oh, this guy's just goofy as hell, right? But in any event, on the court, as Corey said, 81 games for the Charlotte Hornets. I think his numbers were like 16 and 12. I think he's a 12 and 12 guy easy for the Lakers. I think his defense philosophy can fit well with what Frank Vogel has traditionally done with his big men systematically. You think about someone like Roy Hibbert, who he got to an all-star level, I think, when he was playing with the Pacers. And Dwight Howard's a 3-time defensive player of the year. And was the best of the lot, by the way, just really quick. I know I'm going long here, but, you know, when it was like, oh, they're bringing in Joe Kim and they're bringing in Dwight, like, God bless Joe Kim. I love him, but he hadn't played a game in like 4 years or three. I don't know what it is. And I know he's on video clips and he's still got that, you know, he's fiery Joe Kim Noah. But to me, a 33-year-old Dwight Howard, it's not even close to the guys that were available. Oh, what is Bogut? Who gives a shit what Bogut wants to do? Like, Dwight Howard was the best one. Dwight Howard today, to me, is better than JaVale McGee. And we'll get to the starting lineups here in a minute. But I thought that was a no-brainer. And I think people were clouding that sort of judgment on Dwight, in my opinion, on how they feel about him personally, which is odd for basketball Twitter to have an opinion on someone they don't know. But, you know, that's
basketball
the rules
Twitter,
of the game, right? So, but yeah, so anyways, a long-winded way of saying Green and Howard are my two favorite additions. I also didn't know Avery Bradley was only 28. Man, some city miles. So I'm hoping he can get back to what he was in Boston, as Corey said.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Dwight situation is really intriguing because he does look super lean, which is really good for somebody his size who's had back issues. You want him to be lighter. I think the issue with Dwight is, like, yeah, he's put up some good numbers in his previous spots in Charlotte and Atlanta. He played, like, a few games for Washington. He just hasn't contributed to winning basketball. Like, he's gotten the stats, but it hasn't been in terms of, like, all right, it's helping us win games. That's what he needs to change this year. And I think the thing with Dwight has been, like, he's been wanting to do things his way. You know, he wants to get a post up. He doesn't want to set the picks. He doesn't want to run a pick and roll. He wants to get buckets the way Dwight wants. Well, now he's playing with LeBron. So there's no option here. It's either you're going to play like how I want you to play or you're going to be out of town. So I think if Dwight is willing to buy in and be a center like Roy Hibbert, who's really doing more so the dirty work than the flashy stats, I think it'll work out great. But I'm going to go with you guys. I think Danny Green was a really good signing, and it was the signing they needed because they needed to add another above average starter. You know, they didn't really have a lot of good starters on this team, and you get Danny Green, you know what you're getting from him on defense and on offense. And then, like I mentioned, I really like the Jared Dudley signing to manage some of these personalities in this locker room. Just with a LeBron team, you need a guy like Jared Dudley who's going to organize team dinners, you know, help keep everybody in line and give, you know, help the young guys take a next step because a lot of them aren't going to get minutes.
Right. I forgot about Jared Dudley, my dog. Yeah, Jared Dudley, forgot.
I'll forever be a Jared Dudley fan after last season with the Nets. There's just something about him. I don't know how to explain it. He's just Jared Dudley. But players out. We got Lonzo Ball, Reggie Bullock, Tyson Chandler, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, Lance Stephenson, Isaac Bonga, Wagner. Out of these guys, other than Lonzo, who we already talked about and you guys wish they kept, who else do you wish they kept, maybe non-trade guys free agent-wise?
Well,
I'm surprised you didn't say Lance here.
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I mean, of course. Like, I'd rather them have kept Lance Stephenson. My boy Showtime playing the piano. Now he's out in China. I don't get to see him all year. But, I mean, realistically, you're not going to miss any of these guys. I'm sorry. Maybe Reggie Bullock shooting you're going to miss, but the guy's already not going
to play. He didn't play well for them either.
Right, and he's hurt now. Who knows when he's going to be back with some sort of neck injury, which is also worrisome. Hope he gets well, of course. But, I mean, it probably would be Lance. But again, that's saying a lot about the talent that left this team.
I'm kind of with Corey, man. Sometimes the best way to win is not to play. And this might be, good. Besides the trade bait, man, which they obviously couldn't have kept. Who's my guy that they traded over when they got rid of Beasley? They traded with the Clippers.
Zubac?
Yeah. That kid would be useful at this point, but
trade.
God, I think our players to watch or non-player edition, we can talk about that some more, but I think I'm with Corey, man. This was a necessary purging that had to happen, and I'm not sure I would necessarily give me, although I will say I will put a vote in for Lance in this regard. Frank Vogel and Corey can attest to this, by far got the most out of Lance Stephenson than any other coach he's ever had. Sure. So it would have been nice to see him with the team coming back. And this whole thing for the Lakers is recalibrated for this season. It's a star-laden team now with LeBron and AD. Got veteran presence. I mean, it's a 2011 Pacers with an upgrade, right? So we got the coach in place. You'd been in the system for a year. Players you'd gotten to know a little bit. So actually, I think Lance, in this scenario, ironically, he's just at the Lakers a year too early. I think this would have been a much better scenario for him this year than it was last year. So as flip as we were about it a second ago, I do think I would have liked to seen Lance make it to training camp and reunited with a coach who he's had the most professional success with and see how much he can contribute in that sort of six-man role, getting big buckets, playmaker. That actually wouldn't have been a bad thing to at least give a test run on.
Yeah, I'm good on Lance. But what would be the biggest X factor for the Lakers next year?
For me, it's health. And I know that's kind of like a cop-out answer when we do these at times. But
yeah, so give us another one.
Okay.
Health is going to be the one for everyone. I'm going to start asking this question. What's the biggest X factor, not including players or health?
Okay, so the next X factor.
Hey, Nick, sorry. We didn't do 30 of these last year. You could have told us. If you didn't know we were pissing you off so much with saying health. We didn't.
Continuity.
Put his foot down. I didn't know. I walked into his buzzsaw.
All right, so I'll take continuity. How about that? Can this team find chemistry? How fast can they hit the ground running? Do they buy into Frank Vogel's system quickly? Do they not buy in at all? So I think the continuity between the coaching staff and the players and how soon we can see that would be my biggest X factor. So there you go, Nick. Bam.
That's what I like. Getting creative.
I like that. First you said continuity. I was like, it's like a line out of Hoosiers. What are you talking about? But the way you explain that, that makes sense. And I do agree. That's, you know, how can this team come together? I'd say one factor that I think helps the Lakers, and maybe this is something that will happen on the Golden State Warriors pod, in that other teams are dealing with that too, right? That's an issue for a lot of teams because there was so much player movement this summer that this is something, this continuity and learning how to play together, figuring out coaching staff, et cetera, that's something that everyone will have to go through, save for, you know, the Warriors, who even still got D'Angelo Russell and are dealing without or playing without Kevin Durant for the first time in a few seasons, and the Rockets, teams like that, they're generally the same. That's why you'd give the edge to some of like the Bucks and the Raptors, who pretty much bring back the same roster in that regard. So that continuity thing is a factor. I think they're helped by the fact that a lot of teams are dealing with that, Clippers as well. The one thing that I would add to that, I saw the line for it being non-player, and I'm still going to bang the drum on Rob Pelinka. I don't think
that's a good one.
Is what it's going to be come playoff time. I still think there's probably going to be a move or two trade deadline. And how smart, you know, Nick, you're talking about it, how smart can Rob Pelinka be behind the scenes, not just an agent sort of, you know, flashy in front of the cameras, but can you go work the numbers? Can you work mid-level exceptions? Can you work trades? Can you work assets to tweak and turn different pieces of this roster? I mean, I think there's a good core that's here, but I think there will still be some moves. And can Rob Pelinka, and it's little things, right? We talked about the signing of AD. When that trade went through, there was a big talk about, well, the trade kicker and the signing bonus, and did the Lakers botch that with David Griffin? And if David Griffin can be benevolent and let him sign here so they can get Kawhi, et cetera, et cetera. Little things like that, you know, is Rob going to smarten up and be a quick study on those things to help tweak the roster to where it needs to be come playoff time? Or are they going to look up and say, damn, we really could use a shooter. Too bad we blew that mid-level exception on, you know, whoever. And I'm just talking out of my ass here. But my point is, I think Rob will still be someone that has to have his thumb on the scale, so to speak, and continue to make moves and continue to evaluate talent, continue to have his eyes open on the other 29 teams for value at, you know, against what the Lakers cap is going into the season, trying to find pieces that mesh well for a title run.
Yeah, and I think another thing to point out here, too, is it's also about hiring the right people. Because, like, as a GM or, you know, person in the front office leading the show, you're not doing every single detail. You need to make sure you have people in your front office that are able to communicate to you the necessary things you need to do in every situation. And that's on the Lakers as an organization to kind of improve the front offices. I know there's been reports in the past that they're behind other organizations. So with them being the Lakers and having all this money, there's no reason for that. They should be ahead of everybody else. So I think it's on him and on the organization. But for me, biggest X factor is going to be guard play. I think we talked about it, you know, obviously they have LeBron, Anthony Davis at point guard, shooting guard. You know, we talked about Danny Green, Avery Bradley. Is that going to be enough for you to win a championship? I think so. Me, the guard play is what I'm going to be watching all season.
Yep.
Good one.
Starting lineup on opening night.
Yeah, so this is interesting because we've heard the reports that LeBron is going to probably play point guard. So if LeBron's playing point guard, you don't want Rondo out there. But I feel like Rondo starts the season out there just because it's Rondo, which is not, like, great. So I'll start from the top. So at center, I think you get JaVale McGee the nod. I think Dwight's got to earn that starting spot. JaVale McGee, we saw how he played last year, especially the start of the year, was extremely good. So I think it's JaVale McGee, Anthony Davis, Kyle Kuzma, Danny Green, LeBron. I think that's the five we see. And that's a weird five. But that,
that's been a popular pick by a lot of Laker fans.
Yeah, I think that's the five.
So a couple things. First of all, let me, yeah, what Dwight
coming
has,
at me, or are you just going to, like, you got a point?
I
can't tell. That tone was like, I'm going to come at you, but I also got a point.
Well, so I think it's, I laugh because you said, well, if LeBron plays point, then you can't have Rondo out there. I would argue you can't have Rondo out there under any circumstance. Okay. Who's playing?
That's
but
point.
At center, I would start Dwight. I think his resume is what gives him the nod over JaVale McGee. Like, JaVale McGee, thank you for your service and your time. But barring, you know, Dwight doesn't pull a hammy in training camp, I let them compete in training camp, and I think Dwight's just better. You put him side by side, I think Dwight's better. So I give him the nod. I mean, it's only, you know, 30 minutes, and he split the time. But starting out, I say Dwight Howard's jumping center for me. AD is penciled in as power forward for the next decade, hopefully. I go LeBron James at small forward. There's only 6'9" point guard in Lakers history. I intend to keep it that way if this is my roster. So LeBron's going small forward. Danny Green's your two guard. And I'm shaking things up a bit. I'm going with Avery Bradley as my starting point guard. More shooting guard the more in recent years, but in his Boston days, more of a point guard role. I think a couple things. I can't start Rondo. He's a guy's a sieve on defense, and I can't. And that's with the LeBron James out there too. So you can't have them both out there, right? Defensively. So I think this lineup has a little more defense around it, can protect LeBron a little bit more defensively. I think Avery Bradley can knock down open shots. I think you have a good mix of shooting and defense in this roster, or in this starting lineup rather. I like Kyle Kuzma coming off the bench. I know he's very popular. He's with the gang now. He's with the clique. He's in the in crowd. But Manu Ginobili had a Hall of Fame career as a six man. Mark Aguirre, a lot of people. There's nothing. It's not where you start the game. It's where you finish. And if it's not an ego thing with Kyle Kuzma saying he has to be out there to jump, you know, with LeBron and AD, I like him coming off the bench for a scoring punch. I like him in sort of a death lineup at the end of the game. But starting out, I like him as you know, that offensive energy coming off the bench rather than having no offense on the second unit. So Kyle's on the bench, first one up, but that's my starting five.
Yeah, I have actually really similar thinking to Jay here. The only difference is I'm starting McGee over Dwight, and I think Dwight might work well with Rondo off the bench. They could kind of have some type of weird connection. But I think, you know, LeBron, he's playing point guard offensively. Defensively, he's still playing small forward. So you're going with Avery Bradley, Danny Green, LeBron, AD, and McGee. And then I like Kuzma coming off the bench as your sixth man, because if you don't bring Kuzma off the bench, I'm not sure where you're getting any type of scoring from your bench unit.
Right.
Like, there just really isn't guys out there that can put up buckets. And Kuzma's shown that he can get buckets. And obviously another year further in his progress, maybe he'll be a little bit more efficient. And I still think he'll play 30-plus minutes. It's just going to be coming off the bench instead of starting. Who would be your player to watch next season? This could be negative or positive. I know it says in the notes that it's more leaning towards positive. But if there's a player that you just are concerned about overall, you could take, you know, list them here.
I mean, I'm not really concerned to a major standpoint on anybody at this point. I mean, Rondo's probably the one guy I'm a little worried about, because if he gets too many minutes, I think that's an issue just for spacing purposes. But the guy I'm looking most to watch is Avery Bradley, because I think he could be a big X factor for this team in general, as we've kind of mentioned, and beat the drum. He's got a lot of runtime on this pod. Shout out to Avery Bradley. but I think because of the...
Sorry.
No, you're good. Because of the defensive versatility, the fact that he has been a very good player in this league in the past, on those Boston Celtics teams, as we mentioned, I just think he could be a crucial element to this team if he gets his game back on track offensively, because he has been known to be one of the tougher defenders in this league, and it's the offense game we're missing. And if he can develop some catch and shoot, then I think Avery Bradley is just a guy that can really take this team to the next level.
He had a little juice when he was in Memphis, you know, at the end of last season, so...
Mm-hmm. This is weird, because there are a lot of storylines that I think to follow, and I think, and on the court too, but, and this is counterintuitive and this may seem like a cop-out, but the player to watch is LeBron James. I think that he's faced with a challenge that he hadn't seen in some time. Like, he got to right before signing with the Lakers, he was at a Teflon status, right? He slayed the Dragon, the 7-3-9 Warriors. It took some of those Cavs teams to the finals. He'd really made himself bulletproof, and I think he took a little of a hit. In part, I think there was LeBron fatigue, quite honestly, but also there's an ascension of other players, that sort of next crop of guys, the James Hardens, the Giannis Antetokounmpos of the world, taking that ascension even closer to the same stratus that LeBron James has occupied for the better part of a decade. And there were questions, you know, highlighted mostly like we talked about with David Griffin's interview with Sports Illustrated about how motivated is he, right? Everyone sort of took it as, well, he's going to LA again to capitalize on all these opportunities and sort of the sunset of his career. And it'll be interesting to see what sort of LeBron we see next year. We have these debates on all across the platforms here at OTG about where's LeBron, where's he ranked? Do you still take him? Is he the best player, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm curious to see a motivated LeBron James, what that LeBron James looks like coming back, who's had a year where he didn't have to play deep into June, by the way, has actually had an offseason to recover and let his body heal and rest up. I'm curious to see what kind of LeBron James we get coming out of the gate. So as counterintuitive and obvious as it is, I say the player to watch is LeBron James.
Yeah, no, those are both really good picks. Obviously, like Corey mentioned with Bradley, like if he can get back to playing even close to what he was playing like in Boston, that would be huge for this team on both ends of the floor. And then LeBron, like, did that groin injury impact him moving forward? Is he going to have to deal with little nagging injuries for the rest of the season because he is getting up there in age? You know, what LeBron are we going to get? Is he going to even be the best player on this Lakers team? Is Anthony Davis going to take another step and jump over him and be the alpha on this team? So I think LeBron's a great pick. I'm going to just switch it up and go with Kyle Kuzma here, because I think he has the potential, maybe not to be that third star, but he could be that third scorer that you really need, especially in crucial situations where AD and LeBron are getting so much attention. You know, Kuzma's getting an ISO and he can score. I think his efficiency has to go up as well. He needs to develop his three-point shot. Last season, it wasn't good. His rookie season was a little bit better. They need him to be in that high 30 section, and then that's just going to give them a perfect complement to have, you know, a guy like Anthony Davis and LeBron on the floor. Then you have a guy like Kuzma over there who can give you some much-needed spacing, but he can also score you a bucket.
Yeah.
Now, worst-case scenario for the Lakers next season.
Worst case scenario for me would be the Lakers are bottom of the Western Conference, like not of the playoff standings, not in the Western Conference itself, but they're, you know, somewhere between the 6 and 8 seed range, and they got to get matched up with a tougher opponent early, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because this team is still going to, in the playoffs, it's going to be a different animal. But I think they're, you know, they just don't gel quick. You see a coach getting fired. You see maybe LeBron take that step back. There could be some health issues, and some of these guys you're really relying on to step up, and Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, Danny Green, and Rondo, these guys just don't step up, and this team is sort of just in the middle of the pack in the West, would be my worst-case scenario.
Yeah, I think there's actually more talent on this team than last year, so I think a worst case for them, I think even if with injuries and the roster going through different imaginations, I think they're still a playoff team. My worst case, though, is that like we see that steep decline or that sharp decline in LeBron this year. Like he comes out and the mind is willing, but the body is just not able, right? You know, kind of thing. And it just is not there anymore, and the Lakers sort of through pride and grit and veteran savvy get a first round playoff win and then just get decimated in the second round by a Rockets or a Utah or a Denver or something like that. And just, you know, 4 games or 5 games, just get embarrassed. And, you know, the roster, Vogel's fired, Jason Kidd has ascended, Rondo throws a training table at Vogel. It all becomes a thing, right? And there's more drama in Hollywood. I think that's a worst case that, you know, sort of the pride and the veterans leadership gets them through the first round, second round, they just get embarrassed and mopped off the floor, and it's a long off season of laughing at the Lakers again, I think would be the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I think worst case, like you guys mentioned, low end playoff team, you know, not a home court team. I think there would be a possibility of them getting knocked out in the first round with the right matchup, especially if things aren't working correctly, you know. And we talked about the roster, you know, improvement over last season, but it's still not a great, you know, roster in terms of depth. If they had injury into one of these key starters, it could really kill them moving forward in a playoff series against a more talented team or a deeper team, or just a team that has more versatility. Where you look at the Lakers, it's really AD and LeBron dependent, and the other guys, they just need them to be good, and there's a possibility where they might not be good. So best case scenario, though.
Best case scenario is NBA title.
Yep.
That's
simple.
Yeah, I mean, this team hits the ground running. LeBron is at, you know, MVP level. Anthony Davis is in MVP level. And this team kind of just fights their way through, and we see LeBron James holding up that trophy one more time.
I wonder what the highest finish is for teammates in the MVP voting. I'd be curious.
Two teammates. Jay, what you just said is what I was kind of thinking. Like, can those two guys finish in the top five for MVP? It was kind of like in my head what I was thinking as I said that.
They'd have to be really good, and the other guys would kind of have to be kind of bad.
Right. Well, I mean, I would say, like, I feel like in the olden days you wouldn't do that, but I think once we sort of decided that someone can be a unanimous MVP, then all bets are off. So I think if sports writers would say, yeah, or just voters would say, yeah, if these two guys are, you know, LeBron's playing the best and Anthony Davis is like the third or fourth best, then, you know, no reason voting him that way. So I'm curious. I wonder what that, but I agree with you, Nick. It probably wouldn't be something greater than, hey, the MVP is the winner and his teammate was, you know, like sixth or seventh, you know, because so many other guys in the league that are spearheading their teams. Same thing, best case scenario, MVP season for LeBron or MVP-like season for LeBron, NBA championship, and all those restored in Hollywood.
So I'm going to switch it up a touch. Best case scenario is a championship, but best case scenario is Anthony Davis winning MVP and Anthony Davis winning finals MVP because he's your younger player and you want him to take that next step, and then you're more likely to re-sign him and be relevant for the next 10 years.
Oh, all right. There you go.
Because, I mean, like LeBron does it, it's kind of something we almost expect in a way. Obviously, he's up there in age, but he's superhuman as it is. So, but if Anthony Davis were to take that jump that we've all wanted him to take for the last 2 to 3 seasons in New Orleans, now all of a sudden the Lakers are feeling really, really good about themselves, especially after the trade. But actual prediction for the year?
My actual prediction is I have the Lakers getting, and this is funny because I think I gave the same, I definitely did give the same win total to the Clippers. Oh, no, I didn't. I gave them 2 more. I'm giving the Lakers 54 wins on the season. So I do think there is going to be some load management to a degree, because I don't think you're going to want to wear out LeBron James at this point, and I also think you're going to be somewhat cautious with Anthony Davis. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't ever see these guys both playing the same time after a back-to-back.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
I actually had 55 wins written down. I think the Lakers will try to come out of the gate really fast. And it's interesting because I wonder, because teams, I think, will kind of keep an eye on Golden State, because I feel like Golden State will, I think their positioning may be, let's tread water until Clay's back and really make that push in the second half. So I could see Golden State teetering at a, like a 4-5, maybe even a 6, just depending on how it's going, because there might be a lot of load management for Steph because of the offensive work he's going to have to do in the interim, even though they did sign D'Angelo Russell, or traded for him, rather. But so I think teams may want to look to avoid a Golden State matchup early in the playoffs. So all that to say, I mean, the Lakers may take the position, let's try to get the best record in the West. But also, I could see the argument, if we're running neck and neck with the Clippers, as long as the series is at Staples, it doesn't matter. Like, they're all home games for us, right? If we're the Lakers,
true.
Like, if we're, so being second in the conference isn't that big a deal. So to Corey's point, the load management, that might be a factor. So maybe they're not trying to keep pace with the Clippers necessarily, but I think given that, I think they're okay being on the opposite side of the bracket and ending up at Staples for a Western Conference final. So I had 55 wins.
Yeah, I have pretty much, I can't recall exactly what I had for the Clippers. I don't know if Corey recalls. But I'll go with like 52 because I know that's a little bit less. And like Corey mentioned, I do think LeBron's going to have to get rested a little bit this season. I think Anthony Davis always deals with some random type of injury. And it's still an older roster. It's not like it's a roster filled with a ton of young guys. You know, they'll lose some nights just because then the other team's going to be more energized and have more juice. And they're really just not going to care. But in terms of other predictions for the season, where would they finish in the division and how's the season going to end?
I think they finish second in the division.
Yep.
Behind the Clippers. I do think the Clippers are just going to play more. They're going to fill in the gas pedal a little bit more, I think, this year.
And they got a better overall team depth-wise.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the system already in place. Obviously, they got new pieces, but the same head coach. I think that matters to a degree. I mean, so they're second in the division, and then it's tough to say, like, the prediction for the – I'm saying nothing less than a Western Conference Finals appearance.
No. That tasted kind of vanilla.
I was about to say, yeah, way to hedge it, man. Way to be safe.
If, you know, that would mean that my Western Conference Finals prediction is the Clippers and Lakers.
Oh, well, okay. That's still sex with your boxers on, but all right.
I'm just not ready to give that. And it's too early.
Oh, God.
Fair enough. Fair enough, amigo. Lakers second in the division. I think the Clippers will, just because, you know, the guy who used to chase Apple Corporation is now chasing the Lakers will probably want to come out hot and heavy. And I think there will be a sense of urgency and excitement with the Clippers. So I think they will try to race out to the best record in the league, quite frankly. So, and with what we talked about with load management and resting guys for a playoff run, managing minutes, I think the Lakers, again, are content just keeping pace, keeping an eye on the Clippers. So I think they'd be fine with second in the division. I have them going to the finals, and I think if they can get through the murderer's row of the Western Conference, they will beat anyone on the other side of the ledger, including the Milwaukee Bucks. As great as Giannis was, I think there's still something to be desired in his game offensively. I don't think he's there yet. I think now is your time to get your wins over Giannis before he reaches full sort of max potential. So I think the Lakers will win the NBA championship this year.
All right, you got some spicy take. I'm going to go in between you and Corey. I'll be like instead of vanilla, it'll be like half vanilla, half chocolate. I'm going to put the Lakers in the second division, but I'm going to go with a finals appearance. I'm not sure if they'll win, but I feel like they're going to get there, because if they don't beat the Clippers this year, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to beat them next year, because the Clippers are younger. They have a deeper team. They're going to improve. And Paul George and Kawhi are both younger than LeBron James.
There.
So I think this is LeBron has to kind of capitalize on this season, because it's only going to get harder from here on out in the West. If anything, you could argue this might be one of the easier years in the West, just because the Warriors kind of recovering. The Clippers are adding new pieces. You know, Denver doesn't have that experience yet, and Utah still has to incorporate a lot of new pieces. And, you know, I don't think he's that concerned about Houston as it is. No offense, Jay. But but any other thoughts on the Lakers storyline topic-wise before we get on to League Pass?
No.
No. We can move on. Go ahead.
League pass. Where do you have the Lakers 1 through 10? Obviously, a ton of nationally televised games, but
yep.
We're still basing this off kind of watchability.
I was going to say that, like, ironically, we don't even, I mean, they're going to be on TV, so you don't even need it for league pass.
I gave the Clippers a 10, and the Lakers are a 10 as well for me. And this more so, the 10 for the Clippers is because I think the overall team is going to be really fun. And, like, for this, it's slightly the same, so I think this team is going to be fun to a degree. But I've been big on this. When you have one of the all-time NBA greats in LeBron James, who is at this time in his career, you want to watch that guy as much as possible because eventually these things do end. Like, I remember 2013 Kobe and watching as many games as possible, and that was the end of that Kobe. And I'm glad I watched as many games as I did. So for me, LeBron being at this little end of his career window, if per se, depending on how long you think he's going to last, I think that gives it more intrigue to watch. And, of course, Anthony Davis. It's just the Lakers. So I think for me, it's a 10 for that reason.
Yeah, I'm going to go 10 as well. I think I tweeted out to you guys once that I wanted that the old Source magazine cover with Suge Knight, Dr. Dre, Tupac, and Snoop is like live from death row, right? It was like in 96 when like West Coast was definitely taking over hip hop over the East Coast and its East Coast roots. And I feel that's how this Pacific Division is now compared in the NBA, right? You got KD out for a year. Boston's a little weaker. The Knicks, their grand plan, surprise, surprise, did not work out how they had drawn it up. Milwaukee's still growing as a team. So I think the center of basketball is Los Angeles, and in the larger point, the Pacific Division with Golden State, the two LA teams, for some sort of reality TV dumpster fire reason, the Phoenix Suns, right? So I think it's just the epicenter. So I think most, I mean, and even the NBA, I would argue to an extent is recognizing that because they're actually moving these West Coast games up for, so all you guys on the East Coast can watch them before you have to go to bed. I think the league recognizes just the star power in this division. Forget the conference, just in this division. So I think all, well, most of the Pacific Division will be primetime viewing. So league pass watchability, I give the Lakers a 10 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you make an argument. I mean, it's not even an argument. This division, these two teams, then you add in Steph and, you know, Clay when he's back. I don't know. They have like six of the top 25 players in the league, you know, and then you could even argue they have four of the top 10 players or five of the top 10 players. It's pretty crazy how much star power is just in the Pacific. I'm going to go with a 9.8, same as I did for the Clippers. And the only reason I said that is there's going to be games for both these teams where it's not fun to watch because they're that much better than the other team.
Right.
Where, like, when you have, like, one of those teams that's, like, pretty good or they're coming up, they're a good team and every game is a close game and they're sometimes more fun to watch just because, you know, it's down to 2 minutes. Where there's going to be a couple blowouts here where LeBron and AD are just going to demolish teams. There's also going to probably be games where, like we kind of mentioned, they're going to sit out. But what TV show would you compare to the Lakers this season?
Time out. Nick, just remember that shit when KD's back and Brooklyn's blowing out the Charlotte Hornets by 35. How washed.
And I'm going to be happy because, yeah, but that's my personal love. Like, I don't have personal love for the Lakers. I'll take that every day of the week. And I don't think the Nets will need KD to blow out the Hornets, but that's for another day.
That's true. Fair point.
So now on to the show part. For me, it's easy. It's Game of Thrones. It's my in my
that's
top
a case. Then that means that the Lakers are not going to win a championship because Game of Thrones ended terribly. And that means the Lakers season is too, I guess.
Yikes. Overall, for 6.5 seasons, Game of Thrones was fantastic. It's one of my favorite shows. It's probably in my top five. I think the Lakers are going to be in my top five, probably my top three of most watched team or of the teams I watch the most. The Lakers will be in my top three. So Game of Thrones for me.
So I thought about this one a bit and I came up with Saturday Night Live and I got a few reasons for that. Like, and you know, over like, so one, each generation of Saturday Night Live viewers thinks their time with the show was the best, right? So same thing with the Lakers. If you grew up in the Showtime era, it's Magic and Kareem, Shaq, Kobe Lakers, Kobe, Pau Gasol Lakers. If you're like me, a LeBron fan, and we pack up our U-Haul and go wherever LeBron goes, then you're this iteration of the Lakers, right? So I think there's that similarity between the Lakers as a franchise and then Saturday Night Live. Also, I was trying to think of a show where They can have the show can have a down year and people are down on it, but when it's good, it's really good and still appointment viewing. I think Saturday Night Live is that, you know, no matter when there's up and down seasons, quote unquote, it's still appointment viewing, particularly in a presidential or election year. That's when Saturday Night Live does some of its best work. We're coming up on 2020 for the Lakers 2019-2020 season. And the Lakers are still relevant as much as people get on freaking Twitter and talk about the Suns or the Pelicans or the Timberwolves or whatever other shit team they root for. People know about the Lakers. My mother, who doesn't know squat about basketball, knows the Lakers and knows LeBron James, and it's still appointment viewing. And I know people, fan bases of other teams get upset about that, but that's just how the world works, right? And I've seen people who are, you know, avid fans of other teams tweet more about the Lakers or the Cowboys or the Yankees than they do their own teams, which sort of proves the point. But digress as I have. I think the Lakers are appointment viewing. I think they're Saturday Night Live. I think they're an institution. And I think when they're good, they're really freaking good. And it's something that you find yourself talking about on Monday morning with your friends. So Saturday Night Live.
And isn't Eddie Murphy supposed to do Saturday Night Live in December?
And I'm stoked. I have a whole thesis on why Saturday Night Live only exists because of Eddie Murphy. And he is, in fact, the best cast member ever. But we can do that on another pod sometime.
Yes, we can. We can. I'm going to go
Please don't start with this Eddie Murphy diatribe.
We don't have an hour left here, but I'm going to go, I guess, with one of my favorite shows. I'm going to go with X-Files. But
Rob Pelinka, just got to find it. Don't lie.
Anything else, guys, before we get out of here?
No, I think that wraps it up.
All right, guys. As always, a pleasure talking hoops with you. And Jay, Corey, tell them where they can find you on Twitter and find your work.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at KWALHoops, K-W-A-L Hoops.
I'm on Twitter, jaychris206, J-A-Y-C-H-R-I-S 206. I sometimes write for OTG, but it's been a while now. Nick would like me to write an article, I think. Or maybe not. Maybe he didn't want to write any articles. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't speak for him. But when I do write, those articles can be found with the rest of the gang at OTG.com. OTGBasketball.com. Sorry. Excuse me.
And obviously you can find the brand at OTGBasketball on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at OTG_Nick. You can find all the shows on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. Big thanks to you guys for taking the time to listen to the show, and big thanks to Corey and Jay.
Peace out, knuckleheads.